Tech of Sports, episode 56, Current Sports and Tech News. Tonight on the Tech of Sports, I'll look at some of the current sports tech news and trends that have been going on the last couple of weeks. And just Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content for your smart device. There's an app for both iOS and Android. Don't forget the Stitcher Radio app for all iOS devices and Android. Get Stitcher for free with your favorite Netcast Studio shows preloaded. Stitcher, it's award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone and tablet, and Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. And the Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. Join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific at netcaststudio.com/live. You can join the chat room and usually listen and watch the show live. And welcome everybody tonight after a good start to the month of September, a Labor Day holiday in there. We thought we'd start out a little, get back on track here a little bit with the Tech of Sports and talk about what's been going on in the world over the last few weeks when it comes to sports technology. And that means our best choice for a guest for that is Steve from Netcast Studio. And Steve, thanks for coming on tonight. You're always my favorite person to do a show with.
Are you sucking up or what, Rick? But thanks.
No, I mean, if I can't get Tiger Woods, I got you.
Wow.
As a guest. So you're right up there at the top of my list.
Thank you, sir.
Anytime. And really mean that. And just a lot of tech announcements this week. I know you try to keep up on all that. And then maybe I'll try to put into perspective a little bit how they may impact the world of sports or the sports angle on things. And I know you always play contrarian, kind of. So I like that. And also your perspective. You're not heavily into sports technology. You're a little bit, but you're kind of, you can give the perspective of the everyman and the fan, kind of. So that's it always puts me into perspective with what you think about it, and it's your opinion's always very worthwhile. So we're going to talk a little tonight about, I just got back from a trip, and I was at a really unique golf course in Alabama called Farm Links, and it's actually part of the Purcell Farms property over there, and it's I call it a high-tech golf course. It's actually, they call it a research and demonstration golf course where they try new grasses, they try new fertilizers, they try all sorts of different things that you normally wouldn't have on a golf course and be able to try. They welcome that. They welcome input, and they do a great job over there. It's a huge operation and just some really smart guys. And I think on the course, they have an 18-hole course, and it's beautiful. 20 different types of grass sometimes on that course you play. You don't realize it when you're playing it, but they have books that tell about it, and it's a lot of really cool things going on over there. I really, really enjoyed it and picking the brains of some of those people over there. And Steve, it was quite a golf course, a tough course, and I mean, anyone can play it. It's an open course to the public. But did you ever think there'd be a golf course where they're doing research and analysis every day on grass and fertilizers and dirt, all sorts of stuff like that?
To be very honest, I have never heard of anything like that. And I guess if I think about it, someplace like that is needed to, you know, help golf course managers and golf course designers and things like that. But to have such a remarkable facility for testing of, I guess, most anything you could think of, that's very unique.
Yeah, you're right on track with what they do. They've had, over the course of the 10 years, they've had about 15,000 golf course owners, maintenance people, superintendents from all over the world come there and look at the research they've been doing and test out things and see the different grasses and that type of thing. So, I mean, while it's open for everyday play for as a public course, they have little cottages and cabins and houses right on the property that the people that come into town stay at, and then they stay there for 3, 4, 5 days, whatever, and they have classes that they give and just answer questions and just test out all the great things going on there. So it's purcellfarms.com is the main website. You can take a look at what's going on there. I've never seen a greener – never seen Augusta National up close, but this was so green, everything. You would expect that when they're trying to show off all the good work they're doing there. Just a great course. You know, risk and reward golf. If you make a good shot, you're going to score well. If you don't make good shots, like I did fairly often, it was you're gonna struggle. And the one of the resident pros there is Jason Duffner's coach. Guy's name is Lane Savoy, and he was there one day helping us out, and he had the TrackMan, which is the audio, video recording and pressure points and sensor little thing that shows swing variables and helps people with swings. He was there one morning showing off. It's about a $40,000 little simulator he had there. Wow. And they were showing that off and breaking down swings and that type of thing. So, I mean, for a golf course that's in the middle of Alabama, these people are on the cutting edge of everything going on in the world of golf. It's quite a place.
That equipment must be working, looking at Duffner's string of late. He's been doing very well. But I tell you, one thing I would hate to have is their water bill.
Well, they have they have lakes right on the property that I think they get the water. Everything is there is self-sufficient.
Really?
They have restaurants there where they grow the vegetables. They have, it's a legitimate farm. They have longhorns cattle there. They have they also have hunting expeditions on the property. They're only using a fraction of the property they have there. We got tours of it. They have plans for another 18-hole course, more hotel space, lodge space, that type of thing. So it's they're really forward looking, and was just a real great thing to be there, even though my golf stunk.
There's always positives and negatives, Rick.
when Jason Duffner's coach can't even help me, where do I go from there, Steve?
Maybe take up ping pong.
they had a ping pong table there in one of the lodges. I would take on all comers in that. I'm a pretty good ping pong player, but. Just a fun place, and had a great time there, and thanks to the people that were there, and it was fun. And while I was driving back yesterday from Alabama, Steve, I was listening to the some of the feeds of people talking about the iPhone release, a new iPhone 5 and iPhone C yesterday. So even though it's not direct sports technology, it kind of impacts what apps and a lot of people are going to be doing on their phones. Did you keep up with the announcement yesterday?
Yeah, I pretty much did. I had to leave for the last few minutes, but other than that, I listened to the majority of the event. I think ever since Steve Jobs passed away that these announcements aren't as secretive as they used to, and we pretty much know what's coming out now. The two major items, the iPhone 5S and the 5C, the 5C being their reduced cost phone, which comes in a multitude of covers or colors, basically. It's an iPhone 5 with a polycarbonate back. Not a whole lot of changes to the hardware itself. And then the 5S with a new advanced, faster processor, fingerprint scanning, and those kinds of things.
I think that iPhone, the cheaper one, iPhone C is going to be really popular. I think that is going to be the go-to device. And I think your Apple heads, your Apple fans are going to go with the higher price one, the one with the more features, the thumbprint reader, that type of thing. I think it's a good move, and I think it's a price point where parents can get in an iPhone in there for their kids if they don't want to go back and get an older model one. For now, people can get into an iPhone for fairly inexpensive and have a current iPhone. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, I do too. Matter of fact, my daughter has a iPhone 4, and so last night she called me and wanted to talk about these new ones, and she's already made up her mind to pre-order a 5C on this coming Friday when they go in pre-order. And, at the $99 point plus two-year contract, that really brings in a whole nother gamut of individuals. Plus, Rick, the various colors now are really going to be attractive to the younger people.
Yeah, the main question I have is what color is she going to go with?
We had that debate. She hates the yellow. She hates the green. She was thinking pink or blue, what would I do? And I am not getting a pink one, so I guess it's going to be blue.
Blue. The blue is pretty attractive. They all look pretty good. I like seeing the different colors, and we'll talk about in another second here. There's going to be a new Galaxy Note 3 coming out in about a week or so, they're having 10 different colors in a Galaxy Note 3. So I think that they've realized they can't do as much with these phones as they were doing a few years ago when they were coming out. So they're going with colors and cosmetic things now.
Yeah, once a year or however frequent your cycle is, you can only push out major new technologies every so often. So you got to come up with other schemas to be able to entice people.
But does the color really matter anyway? Weren't people just getting cases with their favorite colors anyway? And it didn't matter what color the actual iPhone or phone was. They would spice it up with their own little case anyway.
I think it still matters to a lot of people, but also what Apple did on this new cycle is come up with their cases for the 5C, yep, which are the various vibrant colors and have holes in it so you can mix and match so you can really be a color star.
You can. And I mean, I guess the relationship to sports technology where there's a faster, more powerful processor now in this phone. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see what happens with some sports apps and how they take to that, not only games, but fan experience apps and things like that. So I think it opens up a new realm for some of the developers that are into sports technology apps. I know that you download those all the time, don't you, Steve?
Yeah, I do. I play around with them and then delete them. But but you know, for the sports technology fan, Rick, the 5S, the new camera in it has a larger sensor, so much better in low light and especially for moving targets.
Yeah, and at burst mode, it's not going to be a great sports camera, but at least maybe it gives you a chance at getting a better picture than you were with the other phones.
Yeah, so in that respect, Rick, I've got a 5, so am I going to go to a 5S? No, there's not enough changes. If right. I was still on a 4 or a 4S, would I go to it? Probably.
Yeah, and I think my wife's thinking along the same line as your daughter and looking at that the 5C, I think she's kind of into that. I think that's going to be a really popular phone with women.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not me. I don't want to go to my meet up with my technology buddies and go, I got a 5C.
You could pull it a pink 5C out of your purse.
Yeah, they're going to laugh me right out of the room.
Well, we do that anyway. So I guess it doesn't matter. that kind of brings in, because Google had an announcement last week where they talked about a smartwatch and wearable technology is really the big buzzword in sports technology. We've been talking about this for a year. This tech of sports has been on a year, and we've been kind of teasing about it. And it's one of these things that we're talking about. It's not here yet. It's coming, I think. And I just got a press release today and a stat today saying that by 2018, there's going to be 96 million people using wearable technology, either for health and health uses or mobile fitness. So 96 million hardware devices that are going to be wearable technology in the form of a watch or some sort of device. So it's only 15 million this year. That means it's going to go up about, what, sevenfold in the next four years. That's kind of scary in some senses.
Yeah, especially, by 2018, I'm sure we'll be more miniaturized, but can you imagine this size of population wearing something on their head as you're going through your daily life? You know, I've talked about, Google Glass before, and I'm a little concerned about glass, people wearing it in terms of what they're doing with it when you don't know. But in this respect, we're talking about healthcare and things like that, which I think are great. Let me put it a different way. Probably for a younger set, but what do you think about our older generations, are they going to be getting on this bandwagon too?
I don't think they are unless their doctor recommends that they wear some sort of band or some sort of sensor that is healthcare related, where they can be monitored or something can be tracked. And I think that's good in some circumstances. But again, you're signing over some of your privacy to either a doctor or a medical clinic, and the government then gets involved, insurance gets involved. So it's Big Brother is watching. Big Brother's not only watching, they're participating in things now. So that opens up a lot of different avenues for talk and complaints and paranoid people wondering what that information is going to be used for.
Absolutely, because no matter what kind of device we're talking about, there's related metadata, whether it's downloaded through plugging in or sent wirelessly. There's very personal information.
And I love the fact that you used the word metadata on the show, Steve.
And why is that?
That was a great word.
Oh.
That was impressive.
Well, it's what I do for a living.
I know it. I know it. It's great. And it's great having you on, Steve. And we're talking about some of the current tech trends and sports tech trends that have been going on here the last few weeks and what's coming in the future. And let's take a quick break for Amazon.com. And if you're doing any shopping, you can use the affiliate link here at netcaststudio.com. I get people that sent me an email asking what the affiliate link was. So you can always check in the show notes at netcaststudio.com/Amazon. Use it for anything you got shopping-wise coming up here. You hate to say it, but holiday shopping's right around the corner. The fall, especially here in certain parts of the country like the South, is big for weddings. And my wife has got a birthday. We got an anniversary. So I got a bunch of things I got to buy here coming up this fall, and it's great to use Amazon and the affiliate link, netcaststudio.com/Amazon. And Steve, I know you appreciate it when you see a nice little hit come in there, someone use the affiliate link.
Well, I do, and it's not an issue of that we get rich off of that. That's not the intent, but it's to support the cost associated with producing the shows on Netcast Studio, including the Tech of Sports.
Yeah, it is. It's good to see people are taking our message to heart and believe in what you're doing, and that makes you feel really good as well. So netcaststudio.com/Amazon. Do all your shopping through that link. You know, Steve, we're moving along here pretty good here tonight. It's we know how to do this, don't we?
We've done a couple shows, I think.
A couple.
Actually, if I might say, I mean, we're approaching, I think, 1,200 Netcast Studio produced shows, episodes.
That is quite an accomplishment. That is fantastic. It just seems like yesterday, doesn't it?
Well, maybe day before yesterday.
A long day before yesterday.
Since 2006, I think.
Yeah, we were talking before we came on the line. I asked you if you watched a little football over the weekend, and I think a lot of people did. College and the NFL are back going full bore, and wives are going to be sick of seeing football games on the television here very soon. And I just saw a little interesting piece here where the NFL is looking at going to a sensor on the goal line now, where they wouldn't have to review plays. They would be able to determine when the ball crosses the goal line in a lot of those situations where you can't tell if the ball's crossed the goal line. And soccer's using this, tennis is using this, and it's an encrypted signal that's sent across the field and activated by a watch worn by the referee, and it just lets you know when that ball, part of that ball, crosses the goal line. And you think that we need more technology like this in football, Steve, or is there enough right now? The games are pretty long and there's a lot going on right now. Is this something else that they need to worry about?
It's a very good question. You know, Monday night we had the exact play that probably could have made more sense of this on the end zone at the marker, whether it was truly a touchdown or not. Let me start by saying this, Rick, and I'll come back to it. And that is, I'll be honest with you, with the NFL, I'm getting a little disgruntled. And I'm getting disgruntled because they're changing the game. And they're changing the game by, number one, I don't think we might as well do away with kickoffs. There's no kicking game anymore because of some of the new rules. Everything's a touchback or whatever the case may be. And it's boring. It doesn't serve any purpose anymore. Now we have, and we've gone through a progression with reviews. Now every score is reviewed, every turnover is reviewed. It's getting old. I think in so many respects, we got to get back to the fundamentals of the game. And part of the fundamentals of the game is not just football players, but the referees too. They are an essential part of the game, and the human interaction and the calling of plays is essential. By inducing too much technology, Rick, I think we start to disflavor the real intent of the game, and that is not just the game itself, but also the inner working relationship of people, team versus team, coach against coach, and referees trying to, you know, call the applicable call.
So do you think the NFL and the players and everyone involved, do you think that they've gotten a little wimpy and a little soft? Is that part of the problem?
Well, when we talk about some of the rule changes when it comes to tackling and, you know, all this stuff. Okay, you can't touch their head. Well, now you can't hit them below the knee. Well, where can you hit them? You know, running backs, no more leading with their head. Why don't we put flags on their hips and play flag football?
And have them carry a purse and and wear high heels or something.
Because I think, Rick, that...
You're right, Steve. The game has definitely changed.
You can't take that...
In the last 5 years, 10 years, it's changed quite a bit.
You can't take that out of the game. You know, I was mentioning to my wife Monday night, one of the quarterbacks, you know, slid and gave himself up. And I thought to myself, you know, when I was a kid watching Fran Tarkenton, you think he slid and said, oh, don't hurt me, don't hit me? He buried his head and went forward.
And he was a little guy.
That's the game. We are seeing, I don't know if we're seeing more injuries, Rick, honestly, compared to back in the day. But I think back in the day they played injured, which is different today.
I think they definitely did that. And I think the reason is because now these teams have such an investment in these players. If they're not 100%, they don't want to put them out there and have a possibility of a more serious injury when they know if they rest them for a week or two, they could come back, be 100%, and hopefully have a longer career. I think that's what their thought process is on that, whether it's right or wrong. But, Steve, that was a great dissertation. That's why I like having you on here, because you were passionate about that. You like watching football the way that I think, you know, that it was made to be played, and it's changed. I mean, now the defenders can't touch a wide receiver. I mean, there's going to be a quarterback at some point that's going to throw for 6,000 or 7,000 yards because the quarterbacks and the receivers have all the advantages and all the rules in their favor. Now, and I don't know if that's good for the sport.
Yeah, it brings up a good point. I was thinking about the other day, you know, ever since this 5-yard rule on hitting the receiver, you know, that changes all the records. Before, I mean, you could chuck that guy all the way down. And so now guys have a much better opportunity to catch balls and make records and make scores than ever before because of rule changes. Now, rule changes are inevitable. But, Rick, getting back to, I guess, your original question about this goal line thing, I don't think it's needed for this reason, and that is those are the less amounts of calls during a game than the rest of the types of calls. Those are far and few between. I mean, it's very seldom that it's that close. I mean, it's normally obvious it's in or out. Whereas in the rest of the game, maybe we could apply some of these technologies.
I think their argument against you would be that those are the most important plays of the game because it's 6 points going on the board or 6 points not going on the board. So I think that's kind of what they're thinking. We could talk about that all night and talk about the state of football all night. And it's just, you know, we got to watch it. We're guys, it's Sunday in the fall, in the winter, we watch football. You know, there's nothing else on. We're not going to watch ice skating when football's on. So
no, but one last thing for me, yeah. Rick, and that's because I tell you what, from a fan perspective, to me, a part of the football is screaming and getting PO'd off at the ref because I think it's a bad call. That's a part of the game in the sport.
I agree. We need to keep some part of the human element in the game, whether it's with the referees, that type of thing. I think for the most part, the referees actually do a pretty good job.
I do too.
And we figured that out when they brought in those inexperienced replacement referees who didn't do a good job. The guys that are in there right now, they train, work on it all year round. A lot of them, they do have other jobs and stuff, but they take it very seriously. They're graded each play, each game. The pressure's on these guys, and it's not an easy job.
True.
Yeah. As long as we're talking about the NFL, let's touch on the concussion lawsuit that last week they settled for, was it $760 million or $765 million, went to some past players that were all involved in that. It was one of those class action suits. You know, the lawyers are the ones that actually make all the money on the deal. The players will get something. I was surprised to see the players settle on that. I think if they would have waited it out, they maybe could have got more money and also maybe made some changes, helped make some changes in the sport. I think these are changes that maybe need to be made with the helmets and looking at brain injuries better. I think they've started doing that. We've talked about this before. But now some other players now have started another lawsuit. They've changed it up a little bit. So I think once, you know, one lawsuit gets settled, I think when it comes to the NFL and concussions, there's going to be a whole nother lawsuit.
It's interesting, Rick, because I don't want to distance anybody, and certainly I don't want to talk bad about anybody that's had any kind of injuries. However, I think this lawsuit is kind of a disservice to them and their sport that treated them well, because football is the kind of sport where this does happen. certainly they're attempting to take measures to prohibit it or lessen it. But on the same point, you know, no matter what occupation you go into, Rick, you know the hazards. And this is one of the hazards of playing at that level of football. If I was to go get a job as a, you know, a chemist and I end up getting brain cancer from stuff I'm smelling, is that the fault of the company I'm working for? I'm not sure. I'm not sure how you win a lawsuit like this, to be honest with you, when it was self-okay to do so.
No one's going to win. There's going to be a player that gets a concussion next week again on the field. You're never going to stop it. I think you're right. The players know the risks. They're playing football. There's a chance they're going to get injured. There's a chance there's going to be concussions. I think the problem was they didn't know that concussions were that serious. They would send players back on the field that had just had their bell rung, and they don't do that anymore. They're not supposed to do that anymore. I think that will help the situation a little bit, but I don't think you're ever going to stop getting concussions in the sport and having serious injuries. And like you said, it's a risk. I think a NASCAR driver knows there's a risk when they get in that car and go around that track.
That's right.
I think that's part of sports. We're not, you know, they're not sitting at a desk doing debits and credits and as an accountant. So, I mean, they're taking that risk. They're getting paid handsomely to take that risk. And I think that, you know, the players' associations may want to step in and say, you know, we just can't keep doing these lawsuits. It's not going to be good for the league. It's not good for the media exposure, and it makes them look like crybabies a little bit.
Yeah, that's the way I see it. That's a good summation. You know, Rick, I'm not a doctor or a physicist or nothing like that.
You're not?
But I don't know. I have to look at my papers on the wall. But I don't think you can honestly build a helmet to combat this, because it's a matter of the brain jarring inside the head. And if you had a 6-foot, you know, helmet around your head and got jarred, your brain is still going to get knocked around.
There's no way around it. There's going to be concussions. Evidently, there's going to be lawsuits every time there's concussions, or when you get players that are looking, it's a cash grab. Let's call it what it is.
Yeah.
They're thinking the NFL's got all this money. Let's keep filing lawsuits and let's keep getting paid. And it's making the league look, it's tarnishing the reputation and the image of the league. And it's, you know, but it's keeping people like us talking about it.
You brought up something. Maybe one week, Rick, you bring Coach Brew back and we can have a discussion on these professional sports players associations.
Oh yeah. Well, and just the risk do the players understand the risk completely when they're playing in these sports? I think that's what you have to get across to them. But there's always going to be a lawyer that tries to get involved, and you know, there may not be any winners in the lawsuit. The lawyers usually are the winners. So
that's true.
Call it at that. And let's hit one more topic here before we wrap up. And it's, I got to have Steve Lee from Netcast Studio on here talking some current topics in the world of sports and sports technology. And I picked this one out just for you, Steve, because I know it gets this, as they like to say in the West, this chaps your hide when we talk about the price of tickets to go to sporting events or just events in general. And there's a bunch of new technology coming out with tickets and the ticketing process that's supposed to make it easier. I don't know what you would call it. It streamline the process of tickets and, you know, take a lot of the repetition and a lot of the waste out of ticketing now at events. And this would include VIP tickets and other little extras that go with the whole ticketing process, hospitality, VIP services, that type of thing. So high-tech ticketing is coming. It's they're talking about it with the Euro Cup and the World Cup coming up in soccer. Do you think, Steve, I already probably know your answer, do you think that tickets going high tech, do you think that will make tickets prices go cheaper?
Nope.
Will they go higher?
Yeah, because they're going to find, I think eventually, that it costs so much to run this technology. You know, Rick, I think it was about a month ago, I gave you a ring and said, man, where can I get some good pricing on football tickets? My daughter is a Dallas Cowboy fan, like it or not, and she lives in San Diego. Dallas is coming here in 2 weeks to play, and she would love to finally see her team. And so I've been looking around trying to find a halfway decent ticket. We're 2 weeks out, and you think I can still find a reasonable ticket? Top rung seats are still $160. And I don't care where you look, whether it's eBay or StubHub or at the Chargers place or whatever, plus $25 parking. It's beyond absurd. She's not going to be able to go to the game. And it's not because I won't pay that kind of money. I'm not going to pay it because I think it's absurd to get that kind of seating for a 3-hour football game at the top rung. When it comes to maybe new technologies and the processing and availability of tickets could potentially save, Rick, I'll say this, if they can stop the scrubbing and the scalping and the price gouging of tickets. If that can be partially managed, well, then maybe. But I don't think it's manageable.
Well, I feel bad for you guys, but I think you got a couple of things working against you with that game. The Dallas Cowboy games are always more expensive when they come to a town because they're popular.
Yeah.
So I think you have that working against you. But I think my theory is if you show up at the game or around the stadium, around the hotels, there'll be people looking to unload some tickets that day, and you'll be able to get a reasonably priced ticket. I've only been at one sporting event, but I never saw the tickets go down to close to face value around the start of the game. And that was just because there were so limited tickets available for a game that people wanted to attend that were in town at a certain town, and it was just out of hand, and I paid more for a ticket than I should have, but we were there, and we had no other choice. So usually at a game like that, if you hang out around the stadium, you know, scalpers, you know, you may get upset with them hoarding some of the tickets, but usually those guys are left with some that they're selling somewhat close to face value right as the game's starting. So, and that's, I know it's a little stressful to do it that way, but I agree with you. I don't think this high-tech ticketing is going to take any of the stress or a lot of the bring the prices down of tickets at all. I think that just this gives them leverage maybe to increase them even more.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think that it's going to do much. And I guess one of the other things that just really infuriates me is, you know, these organizations and people in general buy the tickets without any intent of going just so they can make more money off of them. And it's something that has to be fixed.
And the other problem is the corporate tickets. There's large companies that have big allotments of tickets to these games, taking up lots of seats, and a lot of those tickets go to waste. They never get in the hands of people that actually want to go to a game. So corporate seats and the corporate aspect of things is been really bad for a lot of professional sports too. So you can talk about those issues all the time. It's good to see technology in sports. It's good to see how it evolves, and it's always fun to talk about it. And Steve, I always ask my guests that one question at the end, the one gadget or piece of tech that they can't live without. What right now is your favorite gadget or piece of tech? I put you on the spot.
Right now I'm going to have to say my iMac. My 27-inch iMac is my lifeblood for not necessarily this network, but also my business. And without it, I would be doomed. Plus, I'm getting so old that I need a big old screen like this.
You like that big screen and that powerful machine, and that runs your whole life, doesn't it?
Pretty much. I mean, I do have the studio has other computers that run depending what we're doing, but primarily, yes. And then portably, I have a MacBook Pro Retina. So, but my iMac is my lifeblood.
You especially need something like that. I'm a laptop guy because I'm so mobile and have to be so many different places. So my couple laptops and my iPad, they serve the purpose for me. I'm not doing anything too demanding that I need to have too souped up a system for what I do for. But what I have to have has to work and has to be durable and has to go with me. So, you know, we all have our needs. And it's once you find that gadget that really fits your needs, that becomes your go-to thing, doesn't it?
It really does. Although I am considering if they come out with the Retina 7-inch iPad, that I'll probably grab one of those.
What iPad do you have right now?
I have the original.
Oh, you got the original still.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got that 4, and that screen on it is just great. I love it. So, Steve.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying I'd like the 7 for portability. That was my main issue.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the iPad Mini. I if they would have had the Retina screen with that, I would have got that instead of that 4 that I have. I definitely would have. But Steve, great having you on. Great show. Great perspective. And let's do it again in another month, probably.
I have no issue with that.
I know you don't, because we don't have to worry about getting a guest all booked and getting them all set up and all their questions answered. We just come on, we talk about it, get in and out, and dinner's waiting for me.
See, that's the most important part now.
Yep, and the Mexican restaurant's waiting for you, Steve.
You're probably right.
It's a good night for Mexican. It's a good night to, actually, it's 9/11. It's a good night to appreciate the country and think back 12 years ago. I was watching a couple of the specials on CNN today, and I don't think we ever want to forget that and how that affected our country, Steve. And I know that you were watching that closely, and you kind of get a little emotional about that every year. And how important that event was to our country and how we've changed we realize that we're not the favorite nation of everybody out there in the world.
Rick, I really appreciate you bringing up this fact in the light, and everybody needs to remember, and we need to remember things of the past that have hurt us, that have, really changed our lives. And yeah, I was very affected by it. I'm still emotional about it. Watching some of those things today really brought back some memories. For all those that are serving, thank you. And if somebody listening doesn't think that there's an importance behind 9/11, I just want you to stop and look around and see what you have in your life, because it's our country and those rights that give those to you.
Yeah, thanks for that, Steve. And great show. Great having you on, and a great perspective again. So thanks for coming on. Netcast Studio has many other shows which may be of interest to you. You can go to netcaststudio.com and check out the list of shows and all the great episodes that are available that you can listen to. And also Two Thumbs Up Media, the podcast and internet broadcast directory put up by the people here at Netcast Studio, twothumbsupmedia.com. So you've been listening to the Tech of Sports podcast, a Netcast Studio production.